my God, it's you. It's me. Welcome to Depressed and Shit, where conversations on mental health don't have to look or sound any one specific way. I'm your host, Leah Matta, and I am not a therapist, and this is not a substitute for therapy, which, generally speaking, is a product of the Western medicine canon, which is perfectly fine. I love therapy so much. It has helped me so much. And, bish, you should think about it as an option for yourself if your depressed ass isn't already in it. But why the fuck do I say all this? Because today, we are bursting out of the Western medicine bubble and looking beyond to a therapeutic substance that is not only stigmatized historically by powerful white people, but has, you know, truthfully also been co-opted in wealthier communities here in the States by white people. So let's keep it real about that from your white host talking to you here. Hi. Today we're talking about ayahuasca, the traditional healing medicine of the indigenous peoples of the Amazon basin that contains the psychoactive element of DMT. So yes, honey, it's a psychedelic. It can do wild shit. And it can also maybe, possibly, sort of, perhaps have huge potential, like many other psychedelics, in the treatment of depression and anxiety and PTSD. That's a big one, among others. Meet Spencer, who is well-versed in chronic depression, and about 3 years ago gave ayahuasca a shot. Did it fix his depression long-term? You'll find out. If you dig the show, hit the subscribe button in your podcast app for weekly new episode notifications. And if you're feeling fancy, please take 2 seconds and drop us a rating on Apple Podcasts. Open the app, scroll down until you see those purple stars and hit them. All right, let's do it. Here's Spencer's story.
I'm nervous.
You're nervous. That's okay. Well, first of all, I should say, Spencer, welcome to Depressed and Shit.
Thank you.
So where are you? You're in Mexico City?
I'm in Mexico City. I am in a decent hotel in the south of Mexico City.
What does decent mean?
I would give it...
Is there continental breakfast?
No, there's not, which is why it's decent. I would rate it like maybe a 6 out of 10.
And you're there. You're staying in this hotel because you're in Mexico City facilitating in the making of a movie.
Yes. And they're very concerned about, you know, this pandemic, as we all are. So as an added precaution, they've decided to ruin my life until June.
You mean like you can't see other human beings?
I can see other human beings on the crew, but I can't see anyone really outside of the crew.
Till June? The fuck? What are you making? Like Lord of the Rings or something?
Well, I can't tell you.
Oh, right. So you are. So I'll just conclude. So we've known each other for a long time.
Surprisingly.
I think that's for 2 reasons. One, we're getting old. And B, time has just flown. So like, I can guess that you have some mental health stuff going on. But truth be told, throughout all the years that I've known you, I don't necessarily know any specifics really at all about that, because no one talks about this shit. Are you able to pinpoint where in your life your issues surrounding mental health started?
I think I started having symptoms of depression when I was around 15, 16 years old. I can only assume it's because I wasn't treated too well by some folks in my high school. And that was sort of, made me feel, you know, made me lose some self-esteem and all that. And I think that's sort of where it all started. And, you know, also being the product of a very sort of waspy suburban community where there was a lot of pressure put on everyone to succeed and me kind of not really fitting into that. I can't really exactly say why, but I know that it sort of started when I was around 15, 16 years old and then slowly got worse, I guess.
When did you first think to go to therapy or like pursue more formal help?
Probably around 25. And I started going to therapy, but I was somewhat broke and it was just kind of insane how totally. Expensive. So I think I went to 3 or 4 sessions and couldn't really afford it and wasn't really ready at that time to ask my parents for help about it. Because I mean, it was, I just admitted to myself that I needed help and I didn't have a great relationship with my parents at that point. So unfortunately, because of financial reasons, I wasn't really able to continue with it. And then about a year ago, I started therapy here. And then I started seeing a psychiatrist about 6 months ago and got medicated.
For the first time in your life?
Uh-huh.
6 months ago. How's that been going?
Great. Honestly, like I feel great. It took a little bit of work. It took a couple of different medications, some trial and error, but right. Yeah, I feel stable and good.
I get so sick of, cause it's like, it's just so common, but I get so sick of this narrative that I hear time and time again from people that they wanted to do therapy and were interested in it, but couldn't afford it. Like I've heard this from so many people and it's like, I don't know what to say to my listeners in a way to make them not afraid of it, but it,
yeah. And I mean, hopefully with shows like yours and the destigmatization of mental health care, you know, maybe more insurers will cover mental health or more workplaces will take it seriously and things like that. And yeah.
So ayahuasca, that's what we're here for today. What initially brought it into your mind's eye? Like what is sort of the genesis of you just like knowing about ayahuasca, maybe not necessarily trying it yet, but sort of becoming interested in it?
Well, I'd always kind of been interested in psychedelics in general. I think I took mushrooms when I was about 15, 16 years old for the first time. And yeah, it just kind of blew me away. And I'd always been really interested in delving a little deeper into that world, especially because it's, you know, it's something naturally occurring and it's something that's used as the basis of kind of the religions of of indigenous tribes.
So You're correct. You laugh, but it's the truth.
I laugh, but it is true. And that sort of made it far more appealing to me. You know, it's not something that's made in a laboratory somewhere. This is something that's actually like held sacred to people and has been for thousands of years. So I was sort of always very interested in trying it, but you know, it's not like you can just buy it from your dealer in LA, you know,
in the United States.
Yeah. So one day I met this girl who would later become my girlfriend. And then later than that, my ex-girlfriend, and she'd been working with it for a year or two. And I had that opportunity and, you know, kind of went for it.
Do you think if it hadn't been for her connecting you, you would have maybe not tried it when you did?
Not when I did, but I think it was always sort of a goal of mine. I mean, especially now there's like a lot of psychedelic tourism going on and there are a lot of people who claim to be shamans and are really there to make money and don't really care, you know, about taking care of you or being ethical or anything else. But I was waiting for the opportunity and I found it one day and I, you know, went for it.
When you went for it that first time, was it with the intentions of helping or treating your mental health?
I kind of wanted to experience it, but I knew, especially after talking to her, that she used it to deal with a lot of trauma and depression and anxiety and things like that. Mm-hmm. Definitely from its reputation, I knew that it wasn't necessarily going to be fun. I mean, it's not really...
It can be fucking terrifying.
It's medicine and, you know, it's bitter and terrifying.
So you try it out once, right? Like the very first time. Was this in a controlled setting? It's highly recommended for the experimenting of psychedelics and hallucinogens to have a guide, a shaman, a religious leader, even like a fucking therapist. Did you have anything like that?
Yeah. It was a ceremony with a shaman and he was very professional, super intelligent. And I think the kind of what attracted me to him more than anything, or like what I liked about him, was that he's from a tribe in the Amazon called the Cofanes in Colombia. He left that tribe to study psychology and anthropology and then had kind of realized that his life work was to study his own people and ayahuasca, right? Through that lens of kind of Western education. So he didn't really explain it to me in a very spiritual way. It was like me, especially at that moment, not having been a very spiritual person, you know, it's one thing for a shaman to say to me, you know, this plant has a spirit and that spirit will cure you and all of this. And it's another thing to say, you know, this is how the medicine functions biologically, right? This is the psychological basis of why this treatment works, you know, and that's...
You respond more to that side of things?
Definitely. Yeah.
I would say me
that,
too.
That definitely made me feel really comfortable.
Yeah.
And yeah, we were about 40 people.
Whoa, that's a big ass group of people.
Yeah, it's normally been like that in my experience. And we were in the backyard of some rich people's house, and there was a fire, and you know, we were up all night just vomiting all over the place.
So what happened?
So I kind of went into the experience, and it was funny. I didn't speak very much Spanish at the time. So there was this woman like translating everything for me. And yeah, he basically said that evolutionarily, our minds make very, very strong neural connections when we experience trauma, because
correct,
it's a survival mechanism, right?
Yeah.
And it's one thing to see your brother get eaten by a lion and then have a fear of lions for the rest of your life. You know, that sort of makes sense evolutionarily. But it's another thing to experience sort of like, I don't know, sexual abuse or anything else like that, and have that legacy just follow you around the rest of your life, you know? At that point, it's like almost counterproductive to your survival, because you're no longer functional in a certain sense, or you have issues with mental health. And basically what he said was that ayahuasca kind of is able to break those connections almost immediately. Like if you were to do standard therapy, it might take you years to sort of confront and get over
the
experience.
Break those neural pathways, yeah. Uh-huh.
But he kind of explained that in order for the medicine to go to those places in your brain, like you have to confront those memories, right? So it's not necessarily a very pleasant experience.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a very introspective experience.
Were there specific memories that you confronted in that trip?
No, not really. I don't think there's anything specific. Because
you can't really control what's going to happen.
No. The crazy thing is it's like, it's very intoxicating. Like with other psychedelics, especially LSD, like I've always felt really lucid.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the first time that I felt like completely like almost drunk in a way. So you even have less control over your brain at that point. It makes you very weak. You know, you're kind of vomiting all night, and going into it, you sort of have to fast. So you're sort of already entering it a little bit in a bit of a weakened state. And it's usually from like midnight to 7 in the morning. So you're already exhausted and haven't eaten all day. And on top of that, you're vomiting. So it's...
So you're really positively selling it.
I think it's great.
Did anything particularly like conventionally wild or unusual happen during any of your trips?
Yeah, you know, there's this one moment in my first trip, and I went with this girl, my ex-girlfriend. Mm-hmm. And so essentially you take a cup of ayahuasca roughly every hour until you don't take any more.
Interesting.
You sort of decide like how deep you want to go, depending on how you're feeling, depending on how it's affecting you, because every batch is different. Every night is different, you know. And we're kind of driving up, and she was really nervous, which made me very nervous, because she had a ton of experience with it. But I mean, even for me, like the 10th time I did it, I went into it scared, less scared, but still, you never know what's really going to happen.
Yeah.
But she just said to me, you know, promise me you'll take at least two cups, because, you know, I don't know when you're going to be back here, and I want you to have the full experience and, you know, leave here having learned something. I said, okay. So then I had taken my second cup and I started a trip, and it was just extremely beautiful. Like that was the, out of all my ceremonies, that was like the most positive trip I'd ever had.
This first one, right?
Uh-huh. And I was sitting there, I'd kind of come down, and I was sitting there just debating whether or not I should take a third, you know, and I was looking at this girl, and I said to myself, you know, if she does it, you know, then I'll do it. And in that moment, she stood up and walked over to the altar where the shaman was, and she drank another cup, and I said, okay, you know, here we go. And I closed my eyes, and she was sitting there next to me again, and she made the exact same scene played out. Like I had seen, you know, 10 to 15 seconds into the future, and I felt like this was, you know, the spirit of the plant showing me the power that it has.
Okay.
That makes sense, at the risk of sounding like a crazy person.
Mm-hmm.
But that was the moment, you know, I was thinking to myself, you know, if she drinks more, I will. And the exact same scene played out twice in a row. It was wild. Kind of the weirdest part is that it feels like you're being guided. It doesn't feel like a drug experience. It feels like someone's actually controlling something, some being or spirit or whatever you want to call it, is actually controlling the experience. That's kind of the wildest part for me. You know, a lot of people come back from that experience religious for the rest of their lives. And I totally get it. felt some things that I couldn't really explain.
Does the shaman actively engage with you the whole time you're there? Like talk to you, sit with you, touch you, anything like that?
No, but you can, I mean, you can ask him for help if you need it. He tries to be as hands off as possible. Yeah, you're not really supposed to touch anyone else. Everyone's supposed to sort of be in their own trip.
I know the word touch can have like weird insinuations these days, but no shadiness, no shadiness.
I mean, the idea is that if you're having a bad time and someone touches you, you can sort of transfer that to them.
I see.
And also if someone's having a bad time, that's sort of what they have to go through in order to heal.
Mm-hmm.
You can ask them for help, and I definitely have. Sometimes you feel like you're dying. The vomiting is really a huge and important part of it.
Do tell.
It was so funny. The first time I did it, you know, we were around 50 people, and at 2 a.m, it's just like a symphony of vomiting.
I can relate in a way. I feel like vomiting right now just from the second vaccine dose, but that's neither here nor there.
But the weird thing is you go into it having fasted for at least like, you know, 18 hours.
So there's nothing in your system.
Yeah, you would think. And like the actual quantity of ayahuasca is around maybe a cup or two cups, but you're vomiting like a physically impossible amount. it's really very bizarre. There was nothing in my stomach and I drank maybe a cup of liquid and I swear to God. Like,
so it's great. It's like a cleanse as well. And you dropped 16 pounds in the process.
That's what they say.
When you say symphony of vomiting, I'm sorry, I just like need to continue to paint this picture. What the fuck? Are people like vomiting into buckets? Like that's the weirdest image.
No, you're supposed to vomit into plants because you're like returning it to the earth.
Okay, got it. You're
not supposed to vomit in the bathroom or anything.
You're welcome, plants. You're welcome. Yeah. Does anyone ever go and not do the ayahuasca and just witness everyone else?
No, you're not allowed to be there if you're not drinking it. But I don't know if you know much about like the actual like plants involved. So basically when it's a tea made from two different plants, it can be made with like quite a few plants, but basically it has to be one plant that contains DMT, which is the active hallucinogen. And then another plant contains an MAOI, which is an enzyme inhibitor that allows you to eat it, right? Mm-hmm. DMT normally has to be smoked or injected.
Yep.
And it only lasts like 15 minutes. But when you eat these two plants together, you're able to drink it and the effects are prolonged and they're less intense. It's like it's an extremely, extremely bitter fluid. I mean, it's like disgusting. You almost can't swallow it.
Fun.
I kind of enjoy it now, but I mean, the first time I tried it, it was...
It's like black coffee.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it tastes like poison. I mean, it always felt kind of strange to me that someone thousands of years ago just so happened to...
Combine those two?
Stumbled upon that because,
well,
first of all, they're extremely, it tastes like poison. Like it's disgusting.
Yeah.
And you have to boil them together for an extended period of time. And like one of the immediate effects is extreme vomiting, right? I feel like even if you were extremely hungry, you wouldn't really want to try that again, you know, if you know what I'm saying. But it always had felt like very coincidental to me that someone would have just stumbled upon that. And they really believe that like the recipe was communicated to them, like it wasn't an accident. And it's you know, before I wasn't a very spiritual person.
I continue to not be spiritual, so.
it's very easy from my perspective to think that these things are completely insane, but this is like the basis of the religion of thousands of people, you know, and it's sort of...
It's true.
I've personally had experiences that I can't explain and that are totally in line with what they told me would happen. And it was... I don't know. It's very hard for me to deny right now that something exists outside of ourselves. And that I think makes me a better person and a less depressed person.
I have a question. This is kind of a silly question, but I am genuinely curious. How much did the ceremonies cost?
I think it was like $40, $50.
Damn, for unlimited tea?
Unlimited.
Unlimited.
Yeah, and then I hear about people doing ceremonies in LA and they charge like $2,000 and it's just...
I'm confused about that. I did not think it was legal in the States. I thought people intentionally had to leave the States. Is it secret?
Yeah, it's secret. But I know people who like go to ceremonies in fucking Malibu and pay $2,000 to $3,000 for the night.
That's really fucking stupid.
But I mean, like, the what we drink here is brought from Colombia in bottles.
Yeah.
And I guess it's, I don't know, it's quite a bit of risk for them, I guess.
I'm intrigued now. The only hallucinogen I've ever fucked with is mushrooms, which seems to be the sort of, that always seems to be like the first go for, yeah, the gateway drug.
Yeah, come on down.
What I want to like push you on is, so why do it? So far you've mostly described negative physical ramifications. What are the good things you've gotten out of it?
Well, I mean, it like instantly cured my depression. And I'm not saying I went from depressed to content. I went from like suicidal to completely ecstatic. It was wild. Like, I woke up the next morning and I was happy to be alive. For the first time in my life, I could sleep well at night. I had no desire to drink to excess. I became a vegetarian immediately. I started having a better relationship with my parents and my friends. And it was just like a complete 180. Like, I literally felt that I had found the cure for depression.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
And did that feeling last?
No, this is sort of, I guess, what I'd like to talk about in general.
Uh-huh.
So basically, like, in order to prepare for it, you are not really allowed to drink or eat meat or have sex or do drugs or anything like that for about a week to 2 weeks before, you know?
Why can't you have, you know what, just keep going.
After that first time, I was just completely, like, I was completely ecstatic. And it wasn't even, what I wanted was to be normal, you know? And, like, what actually happened was I was just, like, so happy to be alive in such a way that I've never felt before. And, you know, slowly I started eating meat again, you know, and slowly I started drinking again or what have you, you know? And it was just kind of, I wasn't really, I've done it like maybe 8 or 9 times now. And I sort of felt this sort of like diminishing return, you know?
Oh, bummer.
As what happens with all drugs, you know? I mean, it's never right. The first time. And I sort of asked the shaman, you know, like what do I do? Am I going to have to do this for the rest of my life? You know, like how...
In the way that one takes like antidepressant pills for years.
Right. Because after the first time, I was just, it was a complete, I'd never experienced anything like that since.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you just sort of told me, well, it sort of shows you where to go, but it's really up to you whether or not you want to go that way. And it really does come down to kind of how much you take care of yourself after the fact, right? It can't live your life for you. You know, it can only show you how to live your life.
You still have to do work for yourself.
Exactly. So if you don't have the willpower or the desire to really change, I mean, you're just going to fall back into the same patterns. That's kind of what happened to me. But I think like one of the most like insidious parts of depression is that it completely limits your willpower. And that's the exact thing you need to get out of it.
Yeah, I know. I remember thinking that a lot. A few months ago, I did an episode on running and community and like how great exercise is for mental health. Like, sure, fucking, these are things that we know, but mm-hmm. when you're wildly depressed, like the desire to run, the desire to do the thing you know is going to make you feel better is so small.
Yeah, I you know, some days I can't even brush my teeth. It's like, how am I supposed to go run 5 miles?
Right.
Like, that sounds impossible. But I think like it definitely gave me... It gave me a push in the right direction, and I learned a ton from it.
Are you interested in doing it more? Or do you feel like it served a purpose for that stretch of time? And
well, it can be very dangerous to do it if you're on antidepressants. So I can't anymore for the time being.
I would guess it's some kind of like overload for your neurotransmitters or some shit like that.
Yeah, something like that. So for the moment, I can't. Someday, I'd definitely love to do it again. But I'm honestly kind of trying to get away from that hippie shit.
Hey, but you bought into it for a time.
I bought into it, and I'm still bought into it, and I would highly recommend it to any and everyone.
For some tries, but as you said, perhaps expect diminishing return as it goes on.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, maybe that was just my experience. But right. You know, I just had a completely earth-shattering, life-altering first trip, and then after that, I never really found what I was looking for.
How long ago was that first life-altering trip?
This was like 3 years ago.
Right around when you first moved down to Mexico.
Yeah, 2017. Mm-hmm.
So it was a time period that is currently closed.
Yeah, but I mean, it's definitely something that continues to impact my life. I mean, it completely changed the way that I view the world mm-hmm. in a more positive way.
Mm-hmm.
Something that I always remember, and something that I'd like to try again at some point.
When you're having like gnarly days these days, are you able to think back to the way you felt after that life altering trip, right? And like hold on to some of the ways you felt just from the memories of it?
I try to, but it's kind of hard. I mean, it's always been hard for me to take myself out of my current mental state, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like if I'm depressed, I can't remember what it feels like to be normal and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
I can remember what happened to me and what I was thinking about, but I can never mentally be in that state again. Like I can tell myself, you know, you should try to think about this in a different way, but like, I can't, it's hard for me to actually feel it, if that makes sense.
We can't just trick our brains into being somewhere that they're not.
Exactly. You know, I, as much as I can tell myself that I need to be happy, you know, it's another thing to actually be happy.
There's a lot of like reading and conjecture out there that ayahuasca is essentially a form of antidepressant. So I guess in a way it's like you were on that form of antidepressant before, and now you're just on a different one.
But I would say that the main difference would be that, for example, like Lexapro, what I'm currently taking, you know, that's a pill you have to take every day. That's sort of a gradual thing. And ayahuasca is sort of a one-time deal, really. I mean, if you go deep enough. And it really shifts the way that you think about things instead of, I don't think it's necessarily a chemical shift in your brain. I think it's like a radical shift in the way that you view the world.
Yeah, I was doing the, you know, about 4.5 minutes of reading before we got on. But I guess what ayahuasca does is it affects something, it affects your prefrontal cortex, as opposed to antidepressants like the one you're on right now affects the chemicals, right? The neurotransmitters like serotonin mm-hmm. and all that shit we hear about. So they are, yeah, you're right. They are like distinct from each other in that way.
And I would say, in my experience, like it functioned in sort of three ways. The first being that like it humbles you. It really does. Like,
you were a cocky motherfucker before.
I mean, I still am, but like, so I would say that it also really helps you to look at your life almost like inhabit a third person perspective in your own life.
Yeah, like an omniscient sort of vibe.
It allows you to like objectively observe your life in a way that. Objectively observe.
God, I don't know if I want to do that with my own life.
Yeah, it allows you to sort of, yeah, see yourself from almost a third person perspective. You know, there are only so many times I can tell you that you should call your mom before you do it, you know, and it's just like, it takes you outside of yourself and you're just kind of like, man, I should really call my mom. And it's so obvious.
Yeah.
It allows you to see very clearly your own life. I would say also that it makes you realize that there is something outside of yourself and that your problems are not very significant. And that makes you like way more able to confront them, I think.
I would love to experience that feeling.
Yeah, no, it's really beautiful. I mean,
that sounds like the most freeing sensation.
Right? Yeah, you just wake up in the morning and you're like, why do I give a fuck about paying my taxes? You know,
yeah.
Like obviously I should call my dad. Like, why are we even fighting, you know?
It sounds like you did start calling your mom.
I did.
But not your dad. It's okay. Well, I have very distinct relationships with my mother versus my father. You've been back to work, right, in the past few months. Has that helped yeah. with your mental health on top of your antidepressants and the new therapist? Has just the act of going back to work changed anything for you?
Definitely. Yeah, I find that working a lot is generally very positive for my mental health.
It is for me too, but I can never tell if that's just from me being distracted from my bullshit and my pain. But right. I'm fine with a distraction, I guess.
Right. I mean, it's kind of the same thing as alcohol, really. I mean, you just yep. forget about your real life for a while.
And though you're around people again, that I think for me would be the most helpful change.
Yeah, it's kind of all of that. And that's really been helpful. But at the same time, I don't know. I mean, sometimes when I'm depressed, like I can't really do my job. And then that sort of makes me spiral in a sense because, yeah.
Do you have plans to do more hallucinogens in the near future?
I think right now I'm on that Western medicine trip, you know, fucking taking Lexapro.
Yeah, big pharma, big American pharma, okay?
Yeah, yeah, all those hippies are super angry at me.
Have you discussed with your psychiatrist, like, a proposed length for how long you'll stay on Lexapro? I don't know, like, I just have some feelings about staying on antidepressants for years and years versus stints of time. Is that something that's come up in your conversations with your psychiatrist?
Yeah, they've said about, I don't know, maybe half a year to a year, depending. But mm-hmm. I honestly haven't seen any downsides. And I had tried so many things to not be depressed other times in my life. You know, I have exercised. I have been sober. I have had success. I've had good relationships with my family, mm-hmm. friends, girlfriends, whatever. I never really felt happy without it. So, I mean, I don't even, right now, I don't even view that as a possibility.
Going off of it.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for sharing all this, Spencer.
No problem.
Depressed and Shit was recorded in a real live bedroom in Los Angeles, California. Music by Eric England, logo designed by Carrie Weiss, produced and hosted by Real Honest Biatch Liam Atta. Do you have reactions to today's episode? Do you have an experience with mental health you'd like to share? Or are you the baby angel from the heavens that wants to donate to cover administrative costs and all that fun shit? Email us at depressedandshitpodcast@gmail.com. No asterisk here, folks. That's just the logo. Shit is spelled S-H-I-T, baby! To repeat, depressedandshitpodcast@gmail.com. See you next Wednesday.